Ann Drobnik, who's the analyst for the Program Collaboration and Service Integration Initiative in the Division of Disease Control at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. In this capacity, she works on projects to integrate and share STD, HIV, TB, and viral hepatitis surveillance data across the division and to disseminate these data to external audiences. Her previous work has included the coordination of community-based hepatitis C and HIV testing for the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and providing HIV, STD, and viral hepatitis capacity building assistance to tribal health programs and the Indian Health Service in the Northern Plains states. She holds a master's in population and family health from Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health.
Hi, good morning, everybody. I'm going to be talking about a component of the Program Collaboration and Service Integration Initiative at the City Health Department, where we matched surveillance data so that we could look at syndemics of infectious disease. So Program Collaboration and Service Integration, otherwise known as PCSI, is a CDC initiative. We're one of six jurisdictions that received dedicated funding in 2010. And the aim of PCSI is to strengthen collaboration in health department programs that work on HIV, STD, viral hepatitis, and TB. And so the rationale is both to do with the overlap in risk factors epidemiologically, that similar populations are impacted by these diseases. They have common routes of transmission in some cases. Their co-infection can lead to worse health outcomes. But then also what PCSI is trying to do is break down the historical silos that exist in a lot of health departments where each of these diseases are dealt with very separately. And that is definitely something that we have going on in New York. So the goals of PCSI in New York City, two very broad, big goals, are to integrate data to better understand and address the interaction of disease. And we're doing this in a variety of ways. One is the matching project that I'm going to talk about, but we're also working on facilitating real-time sharing of data so that health department interactions with individual people, either through case investigation or partner services, if they're co-infected, happen in a coordinated way. And then ultimately, we're hoping that we can do a better job of integrating services. So this is both within our own Department of Health TB and STD clinics, but also with providers. We want to assist providers in addressing multiple diseases as well. So the aim of the PCSI Syndemic Project, as we call our matching project, was to better understand how these diseases are interacting in New York City. And so we define a syndemic as infection with two or more diseases resulting in worse health outcomes than would be experienced with either disease alone. And so to do this, we matched our HIV, TB, STD, hepatitis B, and hepatitis C surveillance data. And then we also matched against the Vital Statistics Registry of Deaths so that we could look at infectious disease syndemics. And I know that some health departments actually have integrated surveillance systems, and other countries also have this, but in New York, we do not. And so to do this, we enlisted the help of the experts at the health department. So we formed the PCSI Data Advisory Committee, and that was made up of the surveillance directors from the Bureau of HIV, STD, TB, and then the Bureau of Communicable Diseases, where our viral hepatitis surveillance happens. And then we also included the Division of Informatics and Information Technology, because they're the ones that are responsible for all of the electronic systems where reports come into the health department, and then also maintaining the electronic surveillance systems. And then we included the general counsel's office, because when we talk about sharing data, especially in New York State where we have very strict confidentiality laws, we need to make sure that any data sharing that we're doing is legal and that we're protecting confidentiality. So this gives you an idea of our silos in the health department and where the data live. So we have the four different bureaus that I mentioned, TB, HIV, STD, and Bureau of Communicable Disease. TB and HIV each have their own registry, and that's where we got the information about the TB and HIV cases. The Bureau of STD has one registry where they keep all of their case information. We were primarily interested in syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia that we included in our match. And then the Bureau of Communicable Disease has the Hepatitis B Surveillance Registry and the Hepatitis C Surveillance Registry. So the cases that we included, for acute diseases, which is TB and the three STDs, we looked at incident cases between 2000 and 2010, so an 11-year period. For the chronic disease, and for the acute cases, diseases, people could have more than one case, obviously, in that time period. So we included all of them. And then for the chronic diseases, HIV and viral hepatitis, we looked at both prevalent cases that were still alive as of January 1st, 2000, and then those that were diagnosed and reported between 2000 and 2010. And then we looked at 12 years of vital statistics data, so deaths that occurred in New York City between 2000 and 2011. So we're very lucky in that in our Bureau of HIV, we have sort of an in-house IT. So they're very experienced, the data support unit, in doing large matches. So they've done huge matches with the STD data in the past. They also regularly match against New York City Vital Statistics and the National Death Registry. And they are continually matching to deduplicate the incoming lab reports that they get. And they had the staff resources available, so we relied on them to do the match. We used a deterministic matching model, which is exact character correspondence. They used 36 keys normally in their matching. We used only the first 14 because our data advisory committee decided that with the volume of records, we had over 1.5 million records when we started, that there were just not sufficient resources to do human review. And so we decided to cut off at 14 keys in order to be more sure of the matches that we had. And so because we didn't do human review, we wanted to basically ensure that we could have confidence in our results. And so this was one thing that we looked at. So we looked at HIV status that was recorded in the TB registry and compared it to what we found. So the TB program very thoroughly case manages every single one of their cases, and they try to get HIV status either through testing the person or through chart review or patient disclosure. And they do a great job of that. So we were happy to see that we picked up not even 30 matches that they didn't already have. So that gave us pretty good confidence in our match. Okay, so then we had, from each of the registries, a pretty big disparity in the number of variables that we had available for analysis. So in the pink box, you'll see the variables that we got from each of the registries. But it's very important to note that some of these are incredibly incomplete, particularly race ethnicity. So we have great race ethnicity data from HIV and TB because they do investigate all of their cases. For STD, we had race ethnicity for only about half of the cases. Syphilis is the one disease that's very thoroughly investigated, but chlamydia and gonorrhea, there are just too many cases to investigate. And then for hepatitis, we had only about 25% of cases with race and ethnicity. And then you can see, too, that the TB and HIV registries give us many, many other variables, including risk factors and other health history that we just did not get from the other registries. And so this is what we ended up with. After cleaning and deduplicating, we ended up with just about a million non-unique people. And I say non-unique because anybody who matched is going to appear in more than one of the peripheral bubbles. So chlamydia contributed the greatest number of cases with 366,000. And then TB had the fewest number with not quite 12,000. And then this is how the matching played out. So on the left side, you see each of the seven diseases that we looked at, the number of people, which is the same numbers that you saw on the previous slide. And then if you look across, you can see what diseases they match to. So TB, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and syphilis all had the greatest proportion of matches with HIV. Almost half of the syphilis cases had HIV, and hepatitis C was about 15% matching with HIV. And then although not that big of a proportion, the TB program was very interested in that 4% of people that matched to hepatitis B and the 6% that matched to hepatitis C. They routinely do a hepatitis panel on their patients that are about to initiate treatment to be on the alert for the potential for hepatotoxicity of the TB medications, but they had never really systematically analyzed how many of their patients had viral hepatitis, so they were very interested to see that. And then we looked at death, and we basically just looked at people with each single disease who died in that 12-year period and then compared it against people who had more than one disease who died. And so just as an example, HIV, 16% of the people who had only HIV and didn't match to any other disease died in that 12-year period versus 24% of those who had HIV and something else. And for some of the diseases, particularly TB and hepatitis C, almost a third of people who had that disease plus something else died in the 12-year period. So those are just basic overview highlights. If you're interested, we have a poster that will be in the 2:30 session looking at death in people who have hepatitis C and hep C HIV co-infection. But this is just a snapshot. So some of the limitations of these data, the dates that we have in our registries, as is true of all registries, are not the dates of infection, but not even necessarily diagnosis. In New York City, we have people that move from all over the U.S., all over the world, and so they may have known about their infection already, but they're showing up in our registry just at the first point that they get tested. And so it makes it really difficult to use these data to say anything about the timing of infection, what came first, basically, particularly with HIV and hepatitis. We have very incomplete data on race and ethnicity, particularly for hepatitis and STDs, so it makes it difficult to make comparisons between groups. So we were interested in looking at how are people with hepatitis C only different from people with hepatitis C and HIV, and we can't do that comparison because we don't really know anything about the people who only have hepatitis C other than their age and sex. We also only have risk factor information for TB and HIV, which relatively are a small proportion of our total number, but we are able to do some interesting analyses looking at risk factors for people who have those two diseases and are co-infected. So as strengths, this was the very first match of surveillance data that included viral hepatitis in New York City, which was exciting. There have been previous matches of HIV data with TB and STD, but never with hepatitis. So this is really the first opportunity we've had to understand hepatitis co-infection. And the large time frame and the match with vital records is really going to enable us to look at a lot of research questions. And then finally, and really not to be underestimated, I think, is that in a health department like ours that is very siloed, a project like this that brought together the group of experts to actually make decisions about the project was very helpful in fostering collaboration. And that group, our data advisory committee, continues to meet and has worked on a variety of other data sharing projects as a result. And many of these people knew each other before, but they didn't necessarily actively work together. And so this is something that we feel really proud of and hopefully can continue. So just to give you a couple examples of how we've used this match data, so the New York City Health Department recently came out with a hepatitis C strategy for the first time, and these data were very helpful in order to be able to look at causes of death in people who have hepatitis C, and thankfully for the people who have died, we do have race, ethnicity information and more details than we do just from the hepatitis C registry itself. And then we've also been able to look to inform the strategy on the changing risk factors in the hepatitis C and HIV co-infection population over time. So we've seen injection drug use decrease as a proportion of that co-infected group and men who have sex with men increasing, which is interesting and important. We've also done a lot of different provider education activities with this information. So just a couple of examples. As I mentioned, the TB program was very interested in the viral hepatitis issue, and so they've been working with providers in their own clinics to try to strengthen the referral process. So for people that are diagnosed in our TB clinics with hepatitis B or hepatitis C, many of whom are undocumented, we're trying to work with the viral hepatitis program to build up the resources so that the TB providers in our clinics have nowhere to send people who have hepatitis B or C. And then also in the grand rounds that they do in hospitals, educating providers about the importance of doing the hepatitis panel before starting treatment. Infectious diseases among MSM, so we're working on a publication that's geared toward providers, the City Health Information Bulletin, that will focus on MSM health, and infectious diseases are going to be a big part of that. We had an outbreak of meningitis in the last year in the HIV-positive MSM community in New York, and so sort of building off that momentum and all the outreach that was done to providers to especially let them know about other infectious diseases, hepatitis C being one of them now that we know greatly impacts HIV-positive MSM. We're going to link our syndemic data set with the Ryan White program data so that the Ryan White Planning Council can have a sense of co-infections in that population and use it for decision-making on resource allocation. Maybe some of the money that's going to Ryan White services could potentially help to address these co-infections and syndemics. So finally, in conclusion, this matching really did create a formal mechanism for collaboration in our health department that is continuing. And in health departments like ours, where we do not have integrated surveillance yet, this matching method really was a great way to be able to look at a population level at co-infections and syndemics. And then finally, we're hoping to continue to use this data in various ways to improve services for people who have or are at risk for multiple diseases. And just want to thank our data advisory committee and other staff who've worked on this project, and then my co-authors. Thank you very much. Yes?
You alluded to work being done on cause of death among people who are newly infected.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that at all? Is there a good match between the cause of death and whether or not they were infected with the particular agent? That is, people with HIV, you know, or TB, or hepatitis?
So we've only thus far looked at cause of death in people with hepatitis C and people with hepatitis C HIV co-infection. That's the only analysis that we've completed. And I think 52% of the people who were co-infected did have HIV listed as their cause of death on their death certificate. And there were three different liver. We looked at cirrhosis, liver cancer, and viral hepatitis, which it's not exactly clear what that means as a cause of death on a death certificate, but I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but for the co-infected group, it was, I think, less than 5% of deaths attributed to each of those three causes. For people that had hepatitis C only, it was closer to 10% for each of those causes, but primarily the people with hepatitis C who are mono-infected were dying of the things that everyone else dies from, cardiovascular and non-liver cancer.
So about half to 40%
of half
causes other than the infectious agents.
Yes. Yeah. And for both co-infected and mono-infected, it was just less than 10% of people died of drug-related causes. Yeah, I think it was 9% of the co-infected and 7% of the mono-infected. Yes?
Are you looking at this in a real-time way at all, or is it only for retrospective? We're sort of starting to do this, and we're looking at using real-time looking for STIs in HIV-infected populations, to be able to look for continuous years for treatment and diagnosis. I wonder if you, beyond this retrospective, how you're looking, we thought about going forward on a real-time level.
Yeah, so this project was retrospective. Only, but there are efforts at the health department to try to share data more in real time. And so right now, how that's happening between the STD and the HIV programs is basically registry lookup, which is not the most efficient way to do things. So if there's a syphilis case, it gets cross-checked against the HIV registry to see if that person is co-infected, and that then informs partner notification and interaction with that patient. But that's not systematic yet. Right now, we have, it's a bit complicated to explain, but basically our HIV data is still very much separate from the surveillance data for all the other diseases. So all the other diseases have moved onto one platform, MAVEN, that a lot of health departments are using for surveillance, though in separate instances of MAVEN, whereas HIV is still completely outside of that. So there is an ongoing underway effort to get the HIV data into sort of the upstream electronic disease reporting infrastructure so that when an STD case comes into the health department reported electronically, if it matches with someone who's in the HIV registry, that match would get picked up, and then when it goes downstream into the STD surveillance registry, it would be pre-populated with that person's HIV status. But we're not there yet, so we're working on it. Ben, do you want to add to that?
Impressive and a huge challenge to get all those departments and systems would document that to be because of the TV presentation, because we're seeing that a lot in the UK where people are presenting late in their HIV infection with TB or the late preventing illness. And secondly, I appreciate you mentioned a lot of data gaps in the different diseases, but did you see any trends towards significance of poverty and poor access to health services and the risk of being multiply infected with very infectious diseases?
Good questions. So first, on the TB-HIV question, no, we have not looked at that yet. That is potentially something that we can look at. We're limited primarily by the fact that the provider data is extremely dirty. So if it's somebody who is tested in our own TB clinic, that's pretty clean and we can get at that. But if it's someone who is tested in the community, that's very, very difficult, and that has to do with the way that, so if a person comes to a hospital and they get tested for HIV and TB and they're both diagnosed in the same visit, those reports would go basically to two different places in the health department, and a lot of things can happen in between that. And so the dates might not match up. The way that provider is a text field, but facility is coded, and it's not coded. Every program doesn't want their facilities coded in the same way. So the TB program only cares that it came from this hospital system, whereas another program might specifically want to know that it came from, you know, the family planning clinic or the ER. So it's very hard for us to really determine that those two tests happen in the same visit. The second part of your question, yes, we are definitely going to look at, it's actually now a standard at the New York City Health Department that all analyses include an area-based poverty measure. So we're looking at the geographic distribution of co-infections, and we are definitely seeing that there is a relationship for some co-infections. I keep talking about HIV and hepatitis C, but that's one where there's very clearly an income trajectory. With syphilis, not so much. But yes, that's something that we are looking at.
Thank you.